From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk sports. There's a bunch of weird words that come out of the sports world. We're going to take a look at how some of them started. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, of course, as they do each week, language experts, New York Times bestselling authors, and masters of the sports world, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hello, Kathy Petras. You are there at your home in Armilla, Spain. What's new in Armilla, Kathy?
Well, I went to the river yesterday and got caught in a current.
Whoa.
And bobbed downstream.
Wow.
That was my exciting weekend.
And lived to tell the tale. That's something.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was a little odd. But as Ross can tell you, it's like the story of my life. If there's something for me to trip over, get caught on, whatever, it'll happen to me.
Well, Ross Petras, you were there in Toronto in your home as well. And if I understand correctly, you also engaged in some water sports recently. Weren't you at Lake Ontario?
Yeah, it was wonderful. We have a heat wave here of 79 degrees.
Come on
Fahrenheit.
Now. Come on.
So, I laugh.
My wife has a rare bookstore. So we go across the border to pick up books sometimes and clear them through customs. And then right there is a beautiful beach right on Niagara on the Lake. And we went to a wonderful 6 days of being on the beach. It was wonderful.
No currents, huh?
Yep, nice. Warm weather and cool water. That's all I want in life, I think, sometimes.
Speaking of sports, the Olympics are upon us, and so today we are going to talk about some words from the sports world, which is really exciting for me because there's a lots of weird stuff in sports and weird ways of saying things. And I'm guessing you guys have something you want to start off with, but I want to bring something up that just happened to me this morning first, just because I had never thought about it before. I was talking about why someone did something, and just coming out of my mouth, I said, "Why ever you did that? Why ever?" Right?
Wow.
Now, we have a whoever, we have a whatever, we have a whenever, we have a however. We don't have a why ever.
Well, according to Merriam-Webster, we do.
Really?
I just looked at
it. Because I looked it up on Merriam-Webster, too, and didn't find it.
Well, Fletcher, I'm in Canada.
Oh!
So maybe I don't know. I'm just kidding. I have no idea. I just typed in why ever in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, and they have why ever, also why, for what reason.
Oh, I have for whatever reason is my definition.
But I have why ever adverb.
Yeah, for whatever reason is exactly what I would expect why ever to mean. But have you ever heard anybody say that?
No, you're the first time I've ever heard that, actually.
I don't know. I think I have heard it, but I don't think I pictured it in my head as one word.
Well, you hear something like, why ever would you do that? But that's sort of like an emphasis thing. Like, what are you doing? Why ever would you do that?
Why ever, yeah.
But as an adverb.
Yeah, it's not the same as saying why ever you did that, like for whatever reason you did that. Because I was just saying, I can't even remember what it was, but it was like, you did this for some reason, it doesn't really matter. And what came out of my mouth was, why ever you did that, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, because we have why ever would someone do that. That makes sense. Right. Could you repeat what you said again? I just want to get it in my head.
Yeah, let me make up, I can't remember the context exactly, so let me make up a sentence. It was sort of like, why ever you took the milk out of the refrigerator, it was, you know, it was sitting there on the counter. So like, for whatever reason you took it out, I don't, you know, it doesn't matter. Just for whatever reason.
Which is, as we just said, that's the Merriam-Webster. I always pronounce it Merriam.
I'm going to cut in here for a second. Collins, which is more of a Brit, has why ever is British English. An emphatic form of why used in questions. Why ever did you tell him that? Why ever not?
Which we were talking about. That's something different.
Which is exactly what we were talking about. Your way. But I'm saying that they don't have it in your way, though.
Yeah. But it seems like it would be useful, doesn't it? Like, why did you do that?
Yeah.
Why ever.
I like it.
Yeah. Anyway, it wasn't something that I even thought about before it came out of my mouth, and I don't know why it came out of my mouth, but it did, and it just made me think.
You don't know why ever it came out of your mouth, sure.
Why ever it came out of my mouth, it made me think.
Do you want to hear something really interesting? Oxford English Dictionary, the OED, has the earliest known use of the adverb why ever is from the 1890s.
Hmm.
Really?
1891 in Voice, New York.
How strange.
That's really
Holy smokes, that's a shocker.
Yeah, I would have thought why ever would be like oldie Englishy.
Yeah, you know, with an E, yeah, really, old. like Chaucerian or something. Then the wife did wherever.
Anyway, why ever it came up, we can, I guess, move on to sports now. Sports!
Speaking of Olympics, soccer is in the Olympics, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, because this is what spawned this. Yeah, Ross and I were talking about this.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a chat about here. Kathy was saying, you know, when in Spain do as the Spaniards do, and you call soccer football. And she was saying it's difficult to switch over to soccer. Then we had a big talk about when you're in a foreign language, a lot of times, in a foreign language zone, a lot of times I say it's, I didn't have any problem flipping between soccer and football when I was like in Europe or Asia or whatever. Kathy says, Kath, what am I saying what you say? Why don't you say?
Thank you. I was going to say, actually, no, that's not, I do call it football here. But I'm saying my default, though, in my head, I say football, which is different from football. Football to me is American football, NFL football.
Oh, that's interesting. So if you're in, so if we're in Spain and I say football, you think American football. That's good. And I say football, you go, oh, soccer.
Yeah. But my problem was, and this is what I started talking about with Ross, is I was like, why do Americans call it soccer to begin with?
Well, I think we can answer that question with Fletcher. We can give him a little quiz. And that comes, and Americans actually call it soccer from England.
Mm-hmm.
Or do they? I don't know. Let's do a quiz here, Fletcher. <and see. laughs>
Ross, you've become the master of the segue, I must say.
Yes. We're going to go on A, B, and C. Soccer is derived from A, an early humorous and slightly derisive appellation related to socks with short pants gentlemen wore playing this rugby-derived game, or a shortened form of association football, or an abbreviation of South Carwell, a township in the southern UK where soccer was first played.
Yeah, fortunately for me, we've talked about this one before, and so I know the answer to this. And it's a really interesting answer because in England, it used to be called soccer. And that's because it was derived from association football, which was
right.
distinct from rugby football, I think.
Ooh,
well, good. Fletcher, I'm very impressed.
Yeah, so you ended up with shortened versions, right, of each of those. So rugby football, in sort of slang terms, started being called rugger, and association football, sock, A-S-S-O-C football, started being called soccer.
Muy bien, as we might say here in the country of football.
And I'm very glad they didn't take the A form of the association and have a shortened form.
Yes, indeed.
So next, well, we were talking Olympics, but we're going to start with the boys of summer, which is why I am now getting into football, because they do not have baseball here, which is what, that's my personal sport. I'm a baseball girl. Okay, bunt. The word bunt. We know what do with the bunt. You actually, this is my pet peeve, and don't get me started on this. People don't know how to bunt right anymore. It's like, it drives me crazy, and I can't watch baseball anymore, so I can relax about it. You meet the ball with the bat. You don't push the ball, but anyway,
right.
Bunt. A lark-like bird. Bunting, I can't pronounce it, bunting, that lightly lands on branches. B, to strike with the head of horns of a goat or a calf. Or C, from bounty, a gift or a reward. Bunt.
Fascinating. I am also a baseball lover, and I have never once in my life thought about why it's called a bunt.
Well, we can tell you now.
Yeah, the last one doesn't sound right to me. The second one sounds like butt, not bunt, but maybe it's also a bunt. And then the first one was a little bird. I like that one, but I'm going to go, I guess, with number two, the one about the butting the head.
You got it, Fletcher.
Okay.
It's from 1825, to strike with the head or horns of a goat or a calf. And they're saying, interestingly enough, as you suggested, it might be an alteration of butt. Or it could be from Middle English bountain. To leap back or return, which doesn't make as much sense. And the baseball term is from 1889.
How interesting, because you aren't That sounds really active. And when you bunt, you're sort of almost catching the ball with the bat, right?
That's it. You understand the bunt. Talk to some of these players.
Well, we don't want to balk at that idea. But this was the word that I only learned. I learned it when I was a kid from Charlie Brown. Do you remember that, Kathy?
Yeah.
Charlie Brown kept balking when he was pitching.
Wow.
Yeah.
Should we say what a balk is? You're making the motion to pitch. It's the pitcher. And you're making the motion. You're going to deliver the ball, and then you don't. That's a balk.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of different ways to balk. And it could be that you swing your arm to throw the ball, and then you don't throw the ball. It could be that you just gesture in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. Baseball's very complicated sometimes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so a balk, it's an illegal move by the pitcher.
And then the base runners advance on that. So it's not a good thing to do if you're a pitcher.
Right.
Okay, so this is an interesting one. We have the options of where it came from. A, an unplowed strip in a field, often one missed by mistake. B, from the sound made by a chicken, balk, balk, and the movement of the bird's head when so doing, as in a pitcher moving. C, from the Scots word pawky, shrewd or tricky.
Ooh, I like that one. It's interesting because, well, so when we say, like, he balked at that idea, does that come from baseball?
No, it's reversed.
Okay, well, that's reversed. That's what I would have figured, so... Given those options, what was the first one again? Tell me.
Okay, the first one was an unplowed strip in a field.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I guess since I liked it so much, I'll go with the pocky.
Well, I think it should go back to plowing there, Fletcher.
Really? Tell me more. Yep. This is interesting.
It comes from probably the old English balka, ridge or bank. Influenced by the old Norse balkr, ridge of land.
Of course. So I was just about to say that, Ross.
Yeah, and we can also go to the Proto-Indo-European root, vleg or belg, beam or plank. The idea basically is what we said earlier. It's an unplowed strip in a field. The point is, it's like a hindrance. You're not going to, you know, grow things on it. So you missed it.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you missed plowing that piece. The implication is you made an error by not plowing there.
Yeah. So in baseball, the motion you made an error because you didn't throw the ball or deliver the ball.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
I think that's a really cool one. And in baseball, it came, they're saying, by the time with, like, throwing things, it came from the 1800s in a throwing sense as in baseball.
I personally like the balk balk, which I came up with, and I thought that was really clever. I just want to say that.
We'll keep on going, and we're going to move on to another sport, tennis.
Ooh, yay.
Don't you love tennis? We all love tennis.
I'm very curious about this one because I've heard maybe a folk etymology or something, but I've been curious whether it's true or not.
Well, get ready for some more folk etymologies here, Fletcher. Okay, we have A. We know what love is, a zero score in tennis. We should say the definition. Okay, we have A, from the 17th century phrase, playing for love, i.e. there are no stakes, so there's no score. From the French word for egg, l'œuf, or from the Dutch and Flemish word for honor, l'œuf.
That's a good one.
So the one I've always heard is that second one, the French word for egg, l'œuf, because, you know, a zero, often also called a goose egg, especially in baseball. Zero looks like an egg. And so maybe that's where that came from. I'll go with that because that's what I've always heard. But I've always wondered whether that's true or not.
Well, here we have something where we're not going to really give you much of an answer. B could be considered correct. Kathy, do you want to take another guess?
I should take a guess? I'm going to pick, Ross, I'm going to pick C, from the Dutch and Flemish for honor, l'œuf.
Well, Kathy, you could very well be correct.
What about you,
could
Ross?
Also be
what
from
would
that.
You pick if you had to pick, Ross?
I'm going
to
take a wild guess and pick A, playing for love. There are a lot. Basically, what's happening is there are a lot of theories. No one is sure. There is some sense that perhaps the French goose egg is the most, but then the other people say playing for love, 1670s.
I think the l'œuf one sounds cool. I don't buy it.
Merriam-Webster says that they think it's a clear folk etymology, and listen to their logic here. The problem is the lack of evidence of l'œuf being used in French to mean zero.
Mm-hmm.
The French use zero to mean, or zero to mean zero or naught.
Oh, I don't think that's great argument, though, because I mean, like, but I mean, I don't, goose egg, you're saying the shape of it.
They're saying the theory seems, and in les œufs for eggs, for food. And in their words, the theory seems cooked, which I like.
That's cute.
That's cute.
I don't know. I think we don't know, but it's just interesting. They came out really strongly against.
As a hard-boiled kind of gal, I'm going to disagree.
Yeah.
Although I said I didn't agree with Luff, but yeah.
Kathy, I think your argument's all scrambled, so let's keep going.
Wow.
Okay, we're still in tennis. We have let.
Yeah, I wondered if we'd get to let.
Okay, and that's when the ball hits the net on the serve. And then goes into the right area.
Yeah, you have to redo your serve if you
yeah.
have a let. Yeah.
Okay, we have three origins here. A, from the old Saxon letian, meaning an obstacle or something that hinders something, because the ball hitting the net is hindering the smooth flow of play. From the old English, leitan, Northumbrian leta, incidentally, if you're interested in Northumbrian
distinction. I was wondering about the Northumbrian.
Well, we now know. To allow, or leta, I guess it would be, to allow to leave behind, to depart from, to leave undone. Because even though the ball hit the net, it in effect was allowed to go into the correct box of play. Or C, from the 18th century phrase let up, cease, stop. Because the ball hitting the net has stopped the play.
Hmm, those all seem plausible, which is way different from most of the other words we've talked about, which all have completely implausible origins, even if they're real. I like the let up. The other two seemed overly complicated, and this one just seems nice and straight ahead. So let's go with the let
up. Well, Fletcher, I'm going to ask you something first. When you had the old, here, this is going to be a clue. When you, like, what was the major sport you associate with old Anglo-Saxons when they invaded England?
Sport. I mean, hunting humans.
Pillaging?
I think,
is, yeah.
No, obviously tennis. That was the big sport. For the record, that's not true. But the origin is true. A comes from A, the old Saxon letian,
really?
Obstacle.
Did you make up the phrase let up, or is that actually a phrase?
I didn't make up the phrase let up, but it is, you can say let up, something let up. The rain let up, but it has nothing to do with tennis.
Right, but that phrase maybe also came from that word, right?
It does come from let, because it means a cessation. It means a cease or stop, and then let came from stoppage or obstruction, from letting to hinder, so yeah.
Yeah, so it does come from the same thing.
This was something Ross and I were fascinated about. This is nothing to, we're not going to give you a quiz on this. The word tennis itself, where it originally came from, Ross, you, okay, the modern game we call tennis is short for lawn tennis, but originally, in the 1800s, 1874, it became like tennis. In 1873, it was originally called Ross.
Well, Kath, why don't you give it a shot?
It's You're a being really, really hard, rotten.
It's a,
okay,
but it's a very tough word. Sfaristike.
I was going to say sarafistike.
Sfaristike.
Yeah, it sounds just like tennis.
It does.
Wait, what language is this?
It's Greek.
Okay. Sfaristike. Yeah, totally.
Very good, Fletcher. Hey, can you get, let's see Fletcher's etymological skills here. Can you figure out in any way, there are a bunch of words, this is what this word is derived from?
Sphairistike.
Greeks are nothing if not uncomplicated.
Well said, Kev.
No, not me. I can't do this.
Okay, it's interesting because it comes basically from the root word of sphere, balls are round. So you have the sfa is for sphere.
Uh-huh.
And then you have like a little bit of a etymological fun in the middle. We won't worry about that right now. And then you have techne, which is skill, or as in technology, actually, in English, too. Mm. So a skill sort of batting about a sphere.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Well, so how did that form into tennis?
Well, I think people got really upset about saying Svenisticate.
Well, this is what I didn't know how recent tennis was. It was invented and named by one Major Walter C. Wingfield. They should have just called it Wing Ball or something.
And it was even better.
Yeah, it's nice and easy. It was played first at a garden party in Wales, and no one could pronounce it. So they think it might have then changed to lawn tennis because it was the Anglo-French tenets, hold, receive, take. And it was used when you called the server, that you'd be serving the ball and you'd be going like, ha ha, tenets, I guess.
You know, you got, we like nominative determinism here. Do you guys know that there is a major tennis player named Tennis?
No. Yeah, his really? Name,
I'm pretty sure it's Tennis Sandgren, but it's spelled T-E-N-N-Y-S. Sort of like Tennyson,
I guess.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, like Tennyson or something. Yeah, that's cool. Well, let's move on to then another form of sort of like tennis, but a little different, called badminton.
Oh.
Oh, wait a second. I'm going to interject. How do you pronounce B-A-D-M-I-N-T-O-N? Both of you.
Let me just say it like I would be saying it. I played badminton. I don't really say
badminton.
Yeah, I don't say badminton, and I don't really say badminton. I sort of just jumble all those letters up together.
I'm totally the mitten. Bad.
Oh, really?
Mitten.
You don't say the? No, Fletcher and I both have a slight N in there. Badminton.
Yeah. Just no, slight. I say badminton. Yep. I always hated it, so that's probably why I don't pronounce it properly.
You don't like badminton?
I'm awful at it. Well, don't you remember?
Oh, yeah, you were. I remember that.
I have no hands-eye coordination. Yeah. So, yeah, thank
I
you.
I loved it.
Have you ever watched it during the Olympics, though? They're amazing.
It's a different sport. It's not what we did in our front lawn.
No, not at all.
Okay, anyway, Fletcher, where does badminton come from?
Mm-hmm.
One of the original names for a shuttlecock, and then derived from that, bad from the old English badel, meaning useless, and mintan, mentha, for something thrown away, or in this case, now picked up and used as a game. From badminton house, the name of the house where it was played. From bad, a place in Austria, and minton, the British sportsman who invented the game there.
Well, Kathy laughed at the second one, so I might have chosen that, but I don't think I will now. So it's not the badminton house. I think I'll go with the first one, the combination of the couple of words meaning tossed away that they've now picked up and they're using.
Thank you, Fletcher, because I worked hard on this one because I couldn't think of what to do as a fake. And that is not the answer. The answer is Badminton House, the name of the house.
It really is. Kathy led me astray.
That was called a psych.
And just for the record, the Old English shuttlecock, Old English did have battle, meaning useless. Minton or mentha for something thrown away is not in any language.
Ah,
I just made that up.
Good. No, that was good. I kind of liked that one. I probably would have chosen the Badminton House had Kathy not laughed. But that's on me. Nope, that's on me. That's on me.
Well, what I love is the game started at Badminton House, the Duke of Beaufort's estate in Gloucester, spelled Gloucestershire. And it was called Badminton Battledore. But it was initially started in British India, where they added a net to a game called Battledore and Shuttlecock. And it was big in Pune. And sometimes it was called Pune because of that. But that didn't catch on for whatever reason.
What got me the most, to me, was badminton itself sounded not English at all, the name. What about you guys with that?
Oh, it sounds like one of those English manor names, totally.
Yeah, I thought it did too. Yeah.
Okay, then you're both correct, because it's an old English badminton, which came from the estate of Baduhelm, the person who owned it. So it is.
The funny thing is, though, now looking at it now, it'd be weird to live in Badminton House because it just sounds like a bad, no pun intended, you know, like sports area. Like, hey, yeah, Badminton House.
You know? Badminton House. You're right.
Yeah,
right.
It doesn't sound like a great estate in Gloucester, you know?
No, it's like I live at Surfboard House or something. You're right. Okay, we're going to do Full Nelson.
Wrestling.
Fletcher. Ah, wrestling. This is
from wrestling.
This is like where you stand behind somebody and you grab them sort of on the back of their head and pull their arms way up above their head, right?
Mm-hmm. And so you basically circle one or both of the opponent's arms underneath the armpit and you secure the neck.
And there's also the half Nelson.
And then, the heads go, and then the hands go up over the head.
Yeah.
Okay. Does it come from the Irish name, oh crud, Niall, meaning champion? Does it come from the named after the Admiral Horatio Lord Nelson? Uh-huh. Or does it come from Morris Nelson, a 19th century wrestler?
I definitely assumed it came from a specific person who maybe, you know, got very popular doing this sort of thing. I would have thought it was, you know, more in the pro wrestling days. But I don't know much about real wrestling. Is this like a thing that they do in real wrestling? Like put you in the full Nelson? Anyway, I want to go with that last guy, Morris.
So you're saying Maury Nelson, the 19th century wrestler.
That's right, Maury.
Well, we're going to go for the British Admiral Horatio Lord Nelson.
No way.
Yes, we made up Morris. There is no Morris.
We don't know, Kathy. Let's not be too quick here. Look up Morris. Now, maybe there is one. No, it comes from British. This could be a folk etymology, but they're saying it's like Nelson liked to surround his opponents in sea battles, and it was named in 1875. And they're guessing it might have come from that. But that's a real folk etymology.
I'm gonna do the full Nelson.
Yeah. Okay, that last but not least, we're going to do our favorite. We used to have a table tennis table downstairs. We used to love playing.
Do you
this
mean
game.
Table spheristike?
Actually, we have another original early name for table tennis. We have two. We have ping pong.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the origin of ping pong?
I just always figured it was an onomatopoeia.
Very good. Do you know the other name for ping pong or table tennis? There are two other names, actually.
Oh, mm-hmm. Gosh. Maybe I just know ping pong and table tennis. What are the others?
Whiff waff.
Whiff waff. I love that name.
Me too.
The worst of it was, though, in 1901, it also was patented under the name by James Gibb, a manufacturer, under the name, which I hate, of Gossamer.
Ew, gross.
That's and awful. That sounds like a feminine hygiene product.
Oh, no.
Or something like that.
I think we're going to move on from that one. And then another company, Jack and Son, did it under Ping Pong, which is the Ping Pong Association.
Which is what stuck.
But the problem with the name Ping Pong was that the Parker brothers got the rights for it, and they were really strict on who used that name.
Mm-hmm. So it became
so
just
table tennis
table
then
tennis.
Came into being. Yep.
Table, what is it again? Espicateria? I forget now already.
Spariske?
Yes, very good, Fletcher.
Thank you. You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.